Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Chapter 3, Lupin's Way. Sonia, in a sudden revulsion of feeling, in a reaction from her fears, slipped back and sat down at the tea table, panting quickly, struggling to keep back the tears of relief. She did not see the Duke gallop up the slope, dismount, and hand over his horse to the groom, who came running to him. There was still a mist in her eyes to blur his figure as he came through the window. "If it's for me, plenty of tea, very little cream, and 3 lumps of sugar," he cried in a gay, ringing voice, and pulled out his watch. "5 to the minute, that's all right." And he bent down, took Germain's hand, and kissed it with an air of gallant devotion. If he had indeed just fought a duel, there were no signs of it in his bearing. His air, his voice, were entirely careless. He was a man whose whole thought at the moment was fixed on his tea and his punctuality. He drew a chair near the tea table for Germain, sat down himself, and Sonia handed him a cup of tea with so shaky a hand that the spoon clinked in the saucer. "You've been fighting a duel?" said Germain. "What? You've heard already?" said the Duke in some surprise. "I've heard," said Germain. "Why did you fight it?" "You're not wounded, Your Grace," said Sonia anxiously. "Not a scratch," said the Duke, smiling at her. "Will you be so good to get on with those wedding cards, Sonia?" said Germain sharply, and Sonia went back to the writing table. Turning to the Duke, Germain said, "Did you fight on my account?" "Would you be pleased to know that I had fought on your account?" said the Duke, and there was a faint mocking light in his eyes, far too faint for the self-satisfied Germain to perceive. "Yes, but it isn't true. You've been fighting about some woman," said Germain petulantly. "If I had been fighting about a woman, it could only be you," said the Duke. "Yes, that is so, of course. It could hardly be about Sonia or my maid," said Germain. "But what was the reason of the duel?" "Oh, the reason of it was entirely childish," said the Duke. "I was in a bad temper, and De Rezelier said something that annoyed me." "Then it wasn't about me. And if it wasn't about me, it wasn't really worthwhile fighting," said Germain in a tone of acute disappointment. The mocking light deepened a little in the Duke's eyes. "Yes, but if I had been killed, everybody would have said, 'The Duke of Chamorros has been killed in a duel about Mademoiselle Gournay Martin.' That would have sounded very fine indeed," said the Duke, and a touch of mockery had crept into his voice. "Now, don't begin trying to annoy me again," said Germain pettishly. "The last thing I should dream of, my dear girl," said the Duke, smiling. "And De Rezelier, is he wounded?" said Germain. "Poor dear De Rezelier, he won't be out of bed for the next 6 months," said the Duke, and he laughed, lightly and gaily. "Good gracious," cried Germain. "It will do poor dear De Rezelier a world of good. He has a touch of enteritis, and for enteritis there is nothing like rest," said the Duke. Sonia was not getting on very quickly with the wedding cards. Germain was sitting with her back to her, and over her shoulder Sonia could watch the face of the Duke, an extraordinarily mobile face, changing with every passing mood. Sometimes his eyes met hers, and hers fell before them. But as soon as they turned away from her, she was watching him again, almost greedily, as if she could not see enough of his face in which strength of will and purpose was mingled with a faint, ironic skepticism, and tempered by a fine air of race. He finished his tea. Then he took a Morocco case from his pocket and said to Germaine, "It must be quite 3 days since I gave you anything." He opened the case, disclosed a pearl pendant, and handed it to her. "Oh, how nice," she cried, taking it. She took it from the case, saying that it was a beauty. She showed it to Sonia. Then she put it on and stood before a mirror, admiring the effect. To tell the truth, the effect was not entirely desirable. The pearls did not improve the looks of her rather coarse brown skin, and her skin added nothing to the beauty of the pearls. Sonia saw this, and so did the Duke. He looked at Sonia's white throat. She met his eyes and blushed. She knew that the same thought was in both their minds. The pearls would have looked infinitely better there. Germaine finished admiring herself. She was incapable even of suspecting that so expensive a pendant could not suit her perfectly. The Duke said idly, "Goodness, are all those invitations to the wedding?" "That's only down to the letter V," said Germaine proudly. "And there are 25 letters in the alphabet. You must be inviting the whole world. You'll have to have the Madeleine enlarged. It won't hold them all. There isn't a church in Paris that will," said the Duke. "Won't it be a splendid marriage?" said Germaine. "There'll be something like a crush. There are sure to be accidents." "If I were you, I should have careful arrangements made," said the Duke. "Oh, let people look after themselves. They'll remember it better if they're crushed a little," said Germaine. There was a flicker of contemptuous wonder in the Duke's eyes, but he only shrugged his shoulders, and turning to Sonia, said, "Will you be an angel and play me a little Grieg, Mademoiselle Kirchnoff? I heard you playing yesterday. No one plays Grieg like you." "Excuse me, Jacques, but Mademoiselle Kirchnoff has her work to do," said Germaine tartly. 5 minutes interval, just a morsel of Grieg, I beg," said the Duke with an irresistible smile. "All right," said Germaine grudgingly, "but I've something important to talk to you about." "By Jove, so have I. I was forgetting. I have the last photograph I took of you and Mademoiselle Sonia." Germaine frowned and shrugged her shoulders. "With your light frocks in the open air, you look like 2 big flowers, said the Duke. "You call that important?" cried Germaine. "It's very important, like all trifles," said the Duke, smiling. "Look, isn't it nice?" And he took a photograph from his pocket and held it out to her. "Nice? It's shocking. We're making the most appalling faces," said Germaine, looking at the photograph in his hand. "Well, perhaps you are making faces," said the Duke seriously, considering the photograph with grave earnestness. "But they're not appalling faces, not by any means. You shall be judge, Mademoiselle Sonia. The faces, well, we won't talk about the faces, but the outlines. Look at the movement of your scarf." And he handed the photograph to Sonia. "Jacques," said Germaine impatiently. "Oh, yes, you've something important to tell me. What is it?" said the Duke, with an air of resignation, and he took the photograph from Sonia and put it carefully back in his pocket. "Victor has telephoned from Paris to say we've had a paper knife and a Louis C's inkstand given us," said Germaine. "Hurrah!" cried the Duke in a sudden shout that made them both jump. "And a pearl necklace," said Germaine. "Hurrah!" cried the Duke. "You're perfectly childish," said Germaine pettishly. "I tell you, we've been given a paper knife, and you shout hurrah. I say we've been given a pearl necklace, and you shout hurrah. You can't have the slightest sense of values." "I beg your pardon. This pearl necklace is from one of your father's friends, isn't it?" said the Duke. "Yes. Why?" said Germaine. "But the inkstand and the paper knife must be from the Faubourg Saint-Germain, and well on the shabby side," said the Duke. "Yes, well." "Well then, my dear girl, what are you complaining about? They balance. The equilibrium is restored. You can't have everything," said the Duke, and he laughed mischievously. Germaine flushed and bit her lip. Her eyes sparkled. You don't care a rap about me, she said stormily. But I find you adorable, said the Duke. You keep annoying me, said Germaine, pettishly, and you do it on purpose. I think it's in very bad taste. I shall end by taking a dislike to you. I know I shall. Wait till we're married for that, my dear girl, said the Duke, and he laughed again, with a blithe, boyish cheerfulness, which deepened the angry flush in Germaine's cheeks. Can't you be serious about anything? She cried. I am the most serious man in Europe, said the Duke. Germaine went to the window and stared out of it, sulkily. The Duke walked up and down the hall, looking at the pictures of some of his ancestors, somewhat grotesque persons, with humorous appreciation. Between addressing the envelope, Sonia kept glancing at him. Once he caught her eye and smiled at her. Germaine's back was eloquent of her displeasure. The Duke stopped at a gap in the line of pictures in which there hung a strip of old tapestry. I can never understand why you've left all these ancestors of mine staring from the walls, and have taken away the quite admirable and interesting portrait of myself, he said carelessly. Germaine turned sharply from the window. Sonia stopped in the middle of addressing an envelope, and both the girls stared at him in astonishment. There certainly was a portrait of me where that tapestry hangs. What have you done with it? Said the Duke. You're making fun of us again, said Germaine. Surely your grace knows what happened, said Sonia. We wrote all the details to you and sent you all the papers 3 years ago. Didn't you get them? Said Germaine. Not a detail or a newspaper. 3 years ago I was in the neighborhood of the South Pole, and lost at that, said the Duke. But it was most dramatic, my dear Jacques. All Paris was talking of it, said Germaine. Your portrait was stolen. Stolen? Who stole it? Said the Duke. Germaine crossed the hall quickly to the gap in the line of pictures. I'll show you, she said. She drew aside the piece of tapestry, and in the middle of the panel over which the portrait of the Duke had hung, he saw written in chalk the words, Arsène Lupin. What do you think of that autograph? Said Germaine. Arsène Lupin, said the Duke in a tone of some bewilderment. He left his signature. It seems that he always does so, said Sonia in an explanatory tone. But who is he? Said the Duke. Arsène Lupin. Surely you know who Arsène Lupin is, said Germaine impatiently. I haven't the slightest notion, said the Duke. Oh, come, no one is as South Pole as all that, cried Germaine. You don't know who Lupin is? The most whimsical, the most audacious, and the most genial thief in France. For the last 10 years he has kept the police at bay. He has baffled Ganimard, Holmlock Shears, the great English detective, and even Guichard, whom everybody says is the greatest detective we've had in France since Vidocq. In fact, he's our national robber. Do you mean to say you don't know him? Not even enough to ask him to lunch at a restaurant, said the Duke flippantly. What's he like? Like? Nobody has the slightest idea. He has 1,000 disguises. He has dined 2 evenings running at the English embassy. But if nobody knows him, how did they learn that? Said the Duke with a puzzled air. Because the second evening, about 10 o'clock, they noticed that one of the guests had disappeared, and with him all the jewels of the ambassadress. All of them, said the Duke. Yes. And Lupin left his card behind him, with these words scribbled on it. This is not a robbery, it is a restitution. You took the Wallace collection from us. But it was a hoax, wasn't it? Said the Duke. No, Your Grace, and he has done better than that. You remember the affair of the Dore Bank, the savings bank for poor people, said Sonia, her gentle face glowing with a sudden enthusiastic animation. Let's see, said the Duke. Wasn't that the financier who doubled his fortune at the expense of a heap of poor wretches and ruined 2,000 people? Yes, that's the man, said Sonia. And Lupin stripped Dore's house and took from him everything he had in his strong box. He didn't leave him a sou of the money. And then, when he'd taken it from him, he distributed it, among all the poor wretches whom Dare had ruined. "But this isn't a thief you're talking about. It's a philanthropist," said the Duke. "A fine sort of philanthropist," broke in Germain, in a peevish tone. "There was a lot of philanthropy about his robbing Papa, wasn't there?" "Well," said the Duke, with an air of profound reflection, "that robbery was not worthy of this national hero. My portrait, if you expect the charm and beauty of the face itself, is not worth much." "If you think he was satisfied with your portrait, you're very much mistaken. All of my father's collections were robbed," said Germain. "Your father's collections," said the Duke, "but they're better guarded than the Bank of France. Your father's as careful of them as the apple of his eye." "That's exactly it. He was too careful of them. That's why Lupin succeeded." "This is very interesting," said the Duke, and he sat down on a couch before the gap in the pictures to go into the matter more at his ease. "I suppose he had accomplices in the house itself." "Yes, one accomplice," said Germain. "Who was that?" asked the Duke. "Papa," said Germain. "Oh, come, what on earth do you mean?" said the Duke. "You're getting quite incomprehensible, my dear girl." "Well, I'll make it clear to you. One morning Papa received a letter. But wait, Sonia, get me the Lupin papers out of the bureau." Sonia rose from the writing table and went to a bureau, an admirable example of the work of the great English maker, Chippendale. It stood on the other side of the hall between an Oriental cabinet and a 16th-century Italian cabinet, for all the world as if it were standing in a crowded curiosity shop, with the natural effect that the three pieces, by their mere incongruity, took something each from the beauty of the other. Sonia raised the flap of the bureau, and taking from one of the drawers a small portfolio, turned over the papers in it and handed a letter to the Duke. "This is the envelope," she said. "It's addressed to Monsieur Gournay Martin, collector, at the Chateau de Chamorros." The Duke opened the envelope and took out a letter. "It's an odd handwriting," he said. "Read it carefully," said Germain. It was an uncommon handwriting. The letters of it were small but perfectly formed. It looked the handwriting of a man who knew exactly what he wanted to say, and liked to say it with extreme precision. The letter ran, "Dear Sir, please forgive my writing to you without our having been introduced to one another, but I flatter myself that you know me, at any rate, by name. There is in the drawing-room next your hall a Gainsborough of admirable quality which affords me infinite pleasure. Your Goyas in the same drawing-room are also to my liking, as well as your Van Dyck. In the further drawing-room I note the Renaissance cabinets, a marvelous pair, the Flemish tapestry, the Fragonard, the clock signed Boulle, and various other objects of less importance. But above all, I have set my heart on that coronet which you bought at the sale of the Marquis de Ferney, and which was formerly worn by the unfortunate Princesse de Lamballe. I take the greatest interest in this coronet. In the first place, on account of the charming and tragic memories which it calls up in the mind of a poet passionately fond of history, and in the second place, though it is hardly worthwhile talking about that kind of thing, on account of its intrinsic value. I reckon, indeed, that the stones in your coronet are, at the very lowest, worth 500,000 francs. I beg you, my dear sir, to have these different objects properly packed up, and to forward them, addressed to me, carriage paid, to the Batignolles station. Failing this, I shall proceed to remove them myself on the night of Thursday, August 7th. Please pardon the slight trouble to which I am putting you, and believe me, yours very sincerely, Arsène Lupin. P.S. It occurs to me that the pictures have not glass before them. It would be as well to repair this omission before forwarding them to me, and I am sure you will take this extra trouble cheerfully. I am aware, of course, that some of the best judges declare that a picture loses some of its quality when seen through glass. But it preserves them, and we should always be ready and willing to sacrifice a portion of our own pleasure for the benefit of posterity. France demands it of us. A.L. The Duke laughed and said, "Really, this is extraordinarily funny. It must have made your father laugh." "Laugh," said Germain. You should have seen his face. He took it seriously enough, I can tell you. Not to the point of forwarding the things, I hope, said the Duke. No, but to the point of being driven wild, said Germain. And since the police had always been baffled by Lupin, he had the brilliant idea of trying what soldiers could do. The commandant at Rennes is a great friend of Papa's, and Papa went to him and told him about Lupin's letter and what he feared. The colonel laughed at him, but he offered him a corporal and 6 soldiers to guard his collection on the night of the 7th. It was arranged that they should come from Rennes by the last train so that the burglars should have no warning of their coming. Well, they came, 7 picked men, men who had been in service in Tonquin. We gave them supper, and then the corporal posted them in the hall and the 2 drawing rooms where the pictures and things were. At 11 we all went to bed, after promising the corporal that, in the event of any fight with the burglars, we would not stir from our rooms. I can tell you I felt awfully nervous. I couldn't get to sleep for ages and ages. Then, when I did not wake till morning. The night had passed absolutely quietly. Nothing out of the common had happened. There had not been the slightest noise. I awoke Sonia and my father. We dressed as quickly as we could and rushed down to the drawing room. She paused, dramatically. Well, said the Duke. Well, it was done. What was done? Said the Duke. Everything, said Germain. Pictures had gone, tapestries had gone, cabinets had gone, and the clock had gone. And the coronet, too? Said the Duke. Oh, no. That was at the Bank of France, and it was doubtless to make up for not getting it that Lupin stole your portrait. At any rate, he didn't say that he was going to steal it in his letter. But come, this is incredible. Had he hypnotized the corporal and the 6 soldiers, or had he murdered them all? Said the Duke. Corporal? There wasn't any corporal, and there weren't any soldiers. The corporal was Lupin, and the soldiers were part of his gang, said Germain. I don't understand, said the Duke. The colonel promised your father a corporal and 6 men. Didn't they come? They came to the railway station, all right, said Germain. But you know the little inn halfway between the railway station and the chateau? They stopped to drink there, and at 11 o'clock next morning, one of the villagers found all 7 of them, along with the footman who was guiding them to the chateau, sleeping like logs in the little wood 1/2 mile from the inn. Of course, the innkeeper could not explain when their wine was drugged. He could only tell us that a motorist, who had stopped at the inn to get some supper, had called the soldiers in and insisted on standing them drinks. They had seemed a little fuddled before they left the inn, and the motorist had insisted on driving them to the chateau in his car. When the drug took effect, he simply carried them out of it one by one and laid them in the wood to sleep it off. Lupin seems to have made a thorough job of it anyhow, said the Duke. I should think so, said Germain. Bouchard was sent down from Paris, but he could not find a single clue. It was not for want of trying, for he hates Lupin. It's a regular fight between them, and so far Lupin has scored every point. He must be as clever as they make him, said the Duke. He is, said Germain. And do you know, I shouldn't be at all surprised if he's in the neighborhood now. What on earth do you mean? Said the Duke. I'm not joking, said Germain. Odd things are happening. Someone has been changing the place of things. That silver statuette now, it was on the cabinet, and we found it moved to the piano. Yet nobody had touched it. And look at this window. Someone has broken a pane in it, just at the height of the fastening. The deuce they have, said the Duke.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Phoebe Reads a Mystery is recorded in the studios of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.